Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Pavla Horáková and we start with the news. The leadership of the opposition Communist Party has decided to recommend to the party's deputies not to support the government of Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek of the Social Democrats in the upcoming vote of confidence. Mr. Paroubek is expected to ask the lower house for confidence in his cabinet in 2 weeks' time. A number of Social Democrat MPs have not yet confirmed whether they will give confidence to the current governing coalition, which relies on a one-vote majority in the lower house. DNA tests have confirmed the identity of another Czech victim who was killed by the tsunami wave in Thailand at the end of last year. The woman is the sixth confirmed Czech victim of the disaster. Five people were killed in Thailand, one in Sri Lanka. Two Czechs still remain unaccounted for. They went missing in the Thai island of Phi Phi and are also believed to have died. Two people were injured when a small passenger plane crashed near the town of Beroun in central Bohemia on Saturday morning. Both were 41-year-old men. One of them suffered a broken leg, the other sustained a number of serious injuries. Police are investigating the cause of the accident, but an aviation expert has said it appears the pilot tried to make an emergency landing after discovering a technical fault. Culture ministers from five Central European countries signed a joint initiative on Friday aimed at boosting cooperation between the region's film industries. The ministers from the Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, Slovakia and Slovenia supported the film industry initiative to help bring the region's films to a wider audience abroad. A spokeswoman for the Slovak Culture Ministry said that films from Slovakia, Poland and the Czech Republic will be presented together at the Cannes Film Festival this year for the second time. Czech star forward Patrik Eliáš won't be competing at the World Ice Hockey Championships after contracting a serious case of hepatitis while playing in Russia. Eliáš, who's 29, will miss the rest of the Russian season and is out of the Worlds after losing 14 kilograms and spending a month in hospital. The Czech Republic opened their World Championship campaign against Switzerland in Austria on Sunday. The Czechs won three consecutive titles between 1999 and 2002, but finished a disappointing fifth last year. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The rest of the weekend should be bright and sunny, with daytime temperatures reaching highs of 28 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková, and that's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Kate Barrett. Coming up in today's program, Pavla Horáková's weekly session of your letters and emails, followed by Letter from Prague, which is about an experience of the first year of primary school in the Czech Republic, written from a father's perspective. And finally, David Vaughan brings us Czech books. This week, it's a book written by an American about his Czechoslovak father's past. All of that's coming up. Please stay with us.
It's time again to go through the mail that has arrived at Radio Prague in the past week. Thanks very much for those letters, emails and reception reports that have come in great abundance. But let's not keep you waiting any longer and let's get straight to this. Yes, that was an old recording of the Turkish Quick Step, the best-known part of the Battle of Prague, a very popular piece of battle music composed in 1788 in London by the mystery man in Radio Prague's April Listeners' Competition. We've got plenty of answers from around the world, but unfortunately we can draw only one winner each month. But before we announce his or her name, let's hear some of the answers you have sent us. This one is from Gina Zenkel from Boston.
Franz, or František Kočvara, was known for a single work, The Battle of Prague, a sonata for solo piano with violin and cello. He was said to have composed other sonatas, serenades, and other pieces, but none of these appear to have survived. Little is known about his life, other than that he was born in Prague and became a virtuoso double bass player. He was known to have been in Ireland in 1790, where he was engaged to play in the orchestra of the King's Theatre in London, and had been in the orchestra for the Handel commemoration in May 1791. He is, however, chiefly famous for his death by hanging in a brothel in Vine Street in St. Martin's, London.
Yes, I'm afraid that is the case. And Mary Lou Krennick from Texas in the United States had this to say.
Poor man. What a way for him to be remembered. He should be remembered for his excellent musical compositions. It's interesting to note that bizarre activities we find shocking today existed always in history.
And Zdeněk Šotola from the town of Karviná in the Czech Republic found out this about the bizarre death of Franz Kočvara or Kočvara.
After his death, the prostitute who witnessed his death, Susanna Hill, was arrested and charged with murder, but was acquitted after testimony proved her innocence. The court records were destroyed to prevent the scandalous case from going public.
Well, I think I prefer to remember Franz Kočvara for his Battle of Prague. Thank you very much for those comments and postscripts. There's always so much to learn, and that feeling is shared by Qi Lei from China.
Every time I entered Radio Prague's monthly contest, I have felt quite knowledgeable because I need to dig facts and answers from the internet or books. So by now, I have learnt a lot about Czech and its people.
Now I know you're waiting to hear the name of the lucky winner, so I shall no longer keep you waiting. The winner of Radio Prague's April competition is Edgar J. Pereira from Managua, Nicaragua. Congratulations, and there's a CD of old Czech classical music for you in the post. But now on to other matters. In last week's mailbox, the head of the English department, David Vaughan, launched a debate encouraging our own listeners to tell us what they thought made good radio and where international broadcasting, especially a small station like Radio Prague, should be heading in a world where international broadcasting is becoming synonymous with 24-hour rolling news. Let's now hear some of your opinions in reply to those questions. This one is from Ted Schrozinger from the United States.
I must say that I very much enjoy Radio Prague, as I believe it strikes a good balance between news and current affairs on the one hand, and features on the other.
And David Eldridge from England wrote,
"For me, Radio Prague has exactly the right format as it is. Its half-hour duration is a convenient length for me, and I think you have a well-balanced program content. Firstly, the role of Radio Prague must be determined. Is it the same as the BBC? Not quite, I think, or at least they don't have the same goals. At home, my main listening is to BBC Radio 4, at least when the content is similar to Radio Prague or has documentaries or feature programs. I appreciate shows like Just a Minute being interspersed in its schedule. It provides a probably needed light relief to brighten up the service."
And our listener Don Schumann had this to say.
"My personal opinion is that Radio Prague has an opportunity to extend and express the unique and shrinking Czech culture, especially through programs about Czech music, authors, scientists, scholars, even food and humor. Where the more bland 24-hour news sites, as Mr. Vaughan so aptly described, remove the unique aspects of that which identifies the places from which they broadcast."
Thank you very much for sharing your opinions with us. Very soon we are planning to pin them up on our website as they arrive. And as we are running out of time, we have to quickly announce the question for our listeners' competition in May. As you will have noticed, this year we ask about people of Czech origin who became well known abroad. And this month we stay in London, only a century earlier, before the composer Franz Kočvara settled there. Our mystery man this month is a Czech printmaker and engraver. He was born in 1607 in Prague, where he also spent his youth. Along with other Czechs of Protestant belief, he left Bohemia following 1620 and moved to Germany. He finally settled in England, where he also died in 1667. After the restoration of the Stuarts, he became a painter at the royal court of Charles II. His engravings can be seen in the National Gallery in London, in Prague, and in many other galleries all over the world. Among his works are also many views of Prague. Please send us the name of the artist to the usual address, Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or english@radio.cz. And don't hesitate to include your comments and questions. We always like to know what you think about Radio Prague broadcasts.
Thanks for that, Pavla. Just a reminder of the Radio Prague annual listeners competition we are running right now. To enter this year, just send us a few lines on the following subject: what Czech beer means to me. The winner will receive a week's stay for two in the Czech Republic, while runners-up will receive other attractive prizes. The winning entry will be read on all six Radio Prague's different language broadcasts, in the original language and in translations. The winner and a partner will be accommodated in family style in the heart of Prague at the Hotel Falkensteiner Maria Prague, while your flight will be courtesy of Czech Airlines, your travel partner to the Czech Republic. Please send your entries to the following address before June 15th. It's Radio Prague, Vinohradska 12, 12099, Prague 2, Czech Republic. Or you can use our email address, english@radio.cz. So once again, the topic is what Czech beer means to me. Well, it's time now for another letter from Prague, this week with David Vaughan.
I still remember vividly my first day at school. I was 4 and a half, and because this was England, I was dressed in shorts, a tie that later became very chewed, and a green cap with a picture of a windmill on it. In fact, the windmill itself, that stood at the other end of the village green, had been demolished the year before by an unimaginative farmer, and it wasn't long before my windmill cap disappeared too. This was all very different from my son Tommy's first day at school in Prague, last September. For a start, this was very much a big city school, in a concrete and glass block surrounded by high-rise flats, and in the background the constant hum of the highway that cuts north out of Prague. But the real difference was the age of the children. At 6, Tommy was already 2 years older than I'd been on my first school day, and some of his classmates were even getting on for 8, and this is quite normal in the Czech Republic. I was a bit sceptical, but I hadn't catered for the pace at which the children learn at Czech schools. I'd been told beforehand that compared with much of the English-speaking world these days, Czech schools are very disciplined and academic, and Tommy's first year at school has borne this out. Within less than 2 months, he was reading and writing, with red squiggles all over his work, where he'd forgotten those dreaded háčky and čárky, those hieroglyphs that so confuse learners of the Czech language. And like all the other children, he was being taught to write perfect copperplate handwriting. Heaven help you if you let that loop slip above the line. From the start, there is also a strict system of marking the children's work. Literally everything they do is marked from 1, excellent, to 5, inadequate, and carefully noted down in a special mark book. My son already knows exactly how many ones or jedničky all his friends have got. His forgotten háčky mean that he's lagging well behind Pavla and Rosalka. The latter, by the way, already has over 60 jedničky. Another thing that is intriguing is the somewhat rustic nature of the curriculum, incongruous in the inner city context, but totally consistent with the rich Czech rural tradition. Within weeks, Tommy could identify and spell 3 different types of wild mushroom, could tell the difference between a tripe and black pudding and other things made from the inside of pigs. He could also identify 6 different trees from their leaves. To make all these things clear, the textbooks have beautiful little hand-painted illustrations. But if there's one thing most definitely lacking in Tommy's textbooks, it is political correctness. "Mummy has to sweep the floors and do the washing," goes one of the sentences that our son had to learn, alongside "Daddy is strong and has a chainsaw." There's been a lot of debate in this country about the need for sweeping educational reforms. I expect that they're needed, but when they do come, I hope that the authorities won't throw out the good with the bad. Now that the mushroom-picking season is round the corner, I find it quite reassuring to think that my son won't be tempted to try out a muchomorka zelená, a sweet-tasting, deadly poisonous speciality of the Czech forests.
That letter from Prague was written by David Vaughan. A reminder that you're tuned to Radio Prague. Well, David is back again with us now to bring you this week's Czech books.
I was recently sent a letter by Joe Horka, an American writer and university lecturer. He enclosed a book he had written with the intriguing title Fields of Light. In his letter, Mr. Horka wrote, "The book follows a 1993 journey that I took to the Czech Republic to follow in the footsteps of my father, who fought in the underground against the Stalinist government. I was immediately absorbed and began to read. As Joe Horka tells his father's story, there are moments of high drama.
The door flew open suddenly, and the air exploded with the white fire of a submachine gun. Bishta's body, cut in half at the waist, slumped to the floor. The STB had not yet seen Josef, and he took a few quiet steps down the stairs before flinging himself over the elevator shaft and onto the landing below. He sprawled, got up, and there were loud voices above. He took the stairs downward three at a time. As he reached the foyer, where the door was ajar, he briefly looked outside. Plain-clothed police were patrolling the front of the house. He ducked back into the dark hallway and found a door to the basement."
This is one of the most dramatic episodes in the book. It is March 1950, and Joe Horka describes the moment when his father and another member of a secret underground group are ambushed by the Stalinist secret police. Parts of the book read like a classic Cold War thriller, but this is not just an adventure story. Fields of Light offers a fascinating and very personal journey, not only into the bleak history of Czechoslovakia in the 1950s, but also into a family's history, as the author searches for missing parts of his own past. On a phone line from his home in New Hampshire, Joe Horka told me about his impulses in writing the book.
I think there had always been in me a mystery about my father. I mean, most boys have some idea of what their father's lives were like in the formative years. And in my case, my father would tell me about Christmas in Czechoslovakia and his early years. But he really didn't talk much about his life after teenagehood, and I wanted to know more about it. And then there was also a great, I would say, sadness in my father. He was generally a very positive man, but when I would try to approach subjects about what did he do, my mother had told me that he'd worked against the communists, and he pretty much rebuffed my efforts, and I could see a lot of sadness taking over in him.
This very personal way in which Joe Horka approaches the subject of a very dark episode in Czech history is one of the book's great strengths, interweaving the public and the private, the past and the present. In the opening chapter, Joe Horka begins his account of his trip to the Czech Republic in 1993, not long after the fall of communism.
"A stewardess announced that we were now over the Czech Republic, and I looked down at that area that ancient history had known simply as Bohemia. All I could see was green and the contours of some hills. This was a land that I'd heard many stories about. Here my father and Mira had seen childhood. Here the Nazis had taken control after the capitulation of the British and French to Hitler at the Munich Conference of 1938, and my father had been put to work in one of their coal mines. Later, in 1949, when Czechoslovakia was under communist rule, he had been imprisoned on a false charge of espionage. After surviving five communist prisons, he'd come out of jail determined to fight the communist government and had joined the underground."
During his visit, Joe meets relatives, in particular his aunt Mira. He visits the places associated with his father's life and pieces together the parts of his family's history that he has never been told or been able to understand.
"I wanted to see the country. Perhaps I needed to. Somewhere in that land that drifted below me, a mystery was waiting for me that had to do with the heaviness and sorrow and pride I had felt all my life, and that I was reminded of each time my father was disappointed by another human being, by a lack of honesty or an outright deception. Each time he'd slipped into the strange depressions he was capable of, and I tried to cheer him up with my spirit, to convince him that not all humanity was bad."
Joe's visit to Prague begins with his aunt Mira, who was 71 in 1993, the year of the trip. We sense the closeness that develops between them, despite the difference of age and language, and it is mainly through Mira that Joe gradually fills in the gaps in his father's early life. Josef Hurka had his first taste of danger as a teenager in the small West Bohemian town of Radnice during the German occupation. The resistance had asked him to smuggle explosives out of the mine where he had been sent as a forced labourer. After the war, he became an officer in the Czechoslovak armed forces, but in February 1949, not long after the communist takeover, he had been arrested on trumped-up charges of leaking intelligence. During 8 months in jail, he was repeatedly beaten, but maintained his innocence, and was finally released in August of 1949. Almost immediately, he joined an underground anti-communist group. His experience had convinced him that the new regime was destroying his country. He worked mainly in smuggling prominent non-communist statesmen out of Czechoslovakia. The book describes vividly how, at the height of the show trials, he helped the economist and politician Josef Macek and his wife Biela to escape across the border.
He stayed still in the snow, holding his breath. He looked up to the rocky gap where Pishta had disappeared. A shadow was coming. It grew, and Josef raised one of his pistols. But the shadow materialized as Pishta, motioning that everything was fine. And Josef lowered the gun and his shoulders and breathed deeply.
A few months later, Josef Hurka had an even closer brush with death in the dramatic ambush that we heard recounted at the beginning of this program. He escaped, but not long afterwards he was once again shot at, and this time wounded by secret police agents. He was smuggled across the border to West Germany. For several years after that, before settling in the United States, he remained in Germany, working as a spy for the Americans. I asked Joe Hurka how his father had felt about spying on his own homeland.
I once heard a man talking about the Battle of Britain and saying that, this was a British man saying that I really wasn't fighting for my government, I was fighting for my mom. And I would say that that's what my father was doing, too. He was really fighting for his family and for his countrymen. And he viewed those who had turned against his country primarily as misguided traitors.
At the time when Joe Hurka wrote the book, his father was still alive, and after initial skepticism, he gradually became more enthusiastic about his son's quest, eventually recounting many of his memories to him. But Josef never wanted to return to his old country, as Joe recalls at a key point in the book when he is visiting the family's old hometown of Radnice.
"Look," he said emphatically, "all of us, everyone involved during that time, the communists, me, everyone involved in the fight, all of us must die for the country to be what it once was." The phrase stunned me at first, and then its meaning slowly took root in me. My father felt he was part of something the country needed to be rid of. He had come to this on principle, and the only reason he would shake from it and return would be to briefly see his mother and father. Riding across Bohemia on this day in 1993, I think I somehow already understood this in my bones. The Czech Republic certainly was not the same country my father and Mira had lived in as children.
Josef Hurka died earlier this year at the age of 79, having never returned to see the Czech Republic. It was on his own visit to the little town of Radnice that Joe had the inspiration for the title of his book, Fields of Light, drawing from the Czech legend of the silent ghost soldiers who will one day rise up in the country's moment of greatest need.
The first version I heard was actually from my Aunt Myra, who talked about the fact that these ghost soldiers of St. Wenceslaw were living in the fields of Bohemia, and they would rise when their nation was in danger. And then I saw, as I went to visit my relatives in Radnice, I saw some of these beautiful Repka fields that are this bright yellow color. It looks like you've switched a light on inside the field. And I could just imagine these ghosts rising from that place. And then that began to dovetail with the idea that my father was one of those quiet soldiers. And that's really where that title came from.
And that is a very vivid passage, isn't it, towards the end of the book, where you describe that moment.
I actually was weeping when I wrote the passage because I realized that that was what the whole thing was about, that the communists had erased my father from history, as they did so many people, and that this was my opportunity to write him back into the history of his country.
Father, your country is free now, and you were there to fight for it when other men would have run. So when you've finished reading my words, close your eyes and think of this, that high on a hill called Kalvaria, overlooking your childhood town of Ragnice, the fields of light are stirring. They are waiting for you to walk among them again.
Joe Horka's book, Fields of Light, is published by Pushcart Press in Waynescott, New York. The name Horka is spelt H-U-R-K-A. And many thanks to Jan Wellinger for reading the extracts from the book. That's all we have time for today, so thank you for listening to Radio Prague, and don't forget that you can find this and all our programs on the internet in text and audio on www.radio.cz. From me, David Vaughan, and all of us here at Radio Prague, goodbye. Thank you.